I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Santa Barbara, California. Come along and join me for a fascinating conversation with Max Barbaco, who's a videographer, filmmaker, and director. Max's latest movie is the memoir of I'm the Duke by J.P. Duke. The Duke, a day in the life of ex-NFL linebacker J.P. Duke, who's sidelined by dramatic brain injuries. Max's film has been selected for showcase at Tribeca, the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, Cannes, Vail, Taos, and was the winner of Best Student Short at the Pasadena International Film Festival. The Duke was Barbaco's thesis film as a directing fellow at the AFI Conservatory. Max, tell us the details of this movie, which I have personally watched over and over again and deconstructed.
Thank you so much. That's all you could hope for. It's a rich movie. It's a layered movie. Like you alluded to, it was my thesis at a film school, and it was really, you know, in film school I made 3 shorts my first year, and they tell you have a 4-picture deal. This being my fourth, I really wanted to just explore every kind of different tool I had in the cinematic toolkit there. And this story about football players with concussion issues.
Give us a little backstory. CTE, tell us about that incredible problem in our society right now.
There's a little bit of a big bit of an epidemic going on right now in the National Football League with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is a degenerative brain disease that could only be diagnosed post-death by examining the tau brain protein. And it's an issue because the NFL denies that there is any link between this disease and playing football, which is just not true. And tons of football players are having to retire early because of this ailment, and they're not being given any support from the league. They're denying there's any link between the two. So what our movie tries to do is humanize this issue by putting you directly in the perspective of one of these football players, not exploring what's going on in the headlines and the legal issues as the movie Concussion does, but really just anchoring the viewer in the human element so they could begin to understand how dire the straits are for these guys who are having to start over way too soon, you know, before you normally would.
A lot of them don't get a do-over. I remember reading that it's this 10-year rough lag period before a lot of the signs and symptoms start showing up. So they don't even know.
No, you don't know. That's what's scary. I mean, I played football in high school. I was a quarterback. I definitely had my bell rung a few times and don't have concussion issues. Our co-writer on the movie, Derek Pastuzik, was a great hockey player in college, and he has some post-concussion syndrome symptoms, and it's been difficult for him. So I kind of had to weigh in through that. But for me, what I really grasped onto in making the movie was this idea of change and how difficult change could be for these guys who spend their entire lives doing one thing. I spent a lot of my high school career really into playing football, and how difficult it can be to transition out of that before you're ready, and especially as a big human being whose livelihood is staked on being a gladiator, you know, in the arena, having to show a semblance of vulnerability, A, in that you might be a little sad because your glory days are over, and B, because there, you know, there might be something very much wrong with your brain down the line.
What was incredible for me was doing a little background research on some of the symptoms, which are so broad-ranging, and irregular behavior, memory loss, motor impairment, irritability, tremors, loss of muscle movement, trouble swallowing, problems with vision, loss of smell, confusion, aggression, anger, violence, anxiety, suicide, Parkinson's disease, and more. That's powerful stuff, man. And as you metaphorically show, those symptoms are showing up in this ex-NFL player that you showcase in the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible. It's the bad thing about it, and what seemed important in making it. You know, recently there was a lawsuit brought against the NFL by a ton of former players, and these people are going to get support from the NFL, millions of dollars for their families, but that's only after they've died. You know, and a lot of players who know that it's coming because they put their bodies on the line for so many years.
So I understand that lawsuit covered 2006 through 15 when the settlement happened, not covering anybody from 2015 forward. That's poignant.
It's BS, and it's, you would hope that, you just feel dirty watching football at this point because you're watching a league that has no self-awareness or humanity or humility in dealing with this issue. everyone knows what's playing out when you watch it. I remember a couple of years ago when the Patriots were in the Super Bowl and there was a catch made by Julian Edelman. He's going in the red zone, and I was very much excited about it and cheering, and then he just got knocked down. He got his bell rung. He obviously was kind of endured a concussion right there, and you gasp. We're all kind of complicit. It's about acknowledging what's at play here and doing as much as we can to fix it. Not quitting to watch football, but just putting pressure on those in power to do something to help these guys.
I remember reading about one guy, New York Giants safety Tyler Sash, who died at 27 years old. Direct cause of death was overdose of painkillers, but underlying cause of death was something very different.
Yeah, and that had to do with repeated blows to the head and concussions. And again,
at 27,
yeah. What's crazy is that this disease, we're very much early on in understanding what it is. And recently they've discovered that it doesn't even have to be crazy blunt trauma to the head that causes it. It's more about snapping the head back and a lot of little movements that add up.
And the other thing is that you dig deeper and you find out that, like you, or what, a hockey player,
yeah,
that you have rugby and baseball, all these different sports where the same thing is happening.
Yeah. Again, it's the commissioner of the NFL, Goodell, made some crazy comment, said there was a risk of sitting on the couch. You could get hurt sitting on the couch just like you get hurt playing on football. And that's like very true, you know, on paper. But what this is really about, this discussion, is that they need to accept that it's a problem, that people are at risk, and do whatever they can to take care of their own.
In the movie, The Duke, you used audio and visual in powerful metaphoric ways that were really searing. Even one that haunts me was early in the morning, he gets up, he's working out in his garage, and you hear the footsteps of the fast pace of the jogging, running in place. But then I go, oh my God, there's like taiko drumming overlaid that adds a whole different. Tell us about that.
I mean, it was about, a lot of these elements were conceived on paper with the writers as well, because we had to map, there's a disjointed narrative, we're playing with his memory, anything to evoke the state of mind of this guy. So going into it, it was very fun to brainstorm how to capture his frame of mind, whether that was with eschewing the traditional ringing of the ear tinnitus stuff that you've seen thousands of times in movies, and going with, you know, a fluorescent buzz in this very key scene that would give you something different but still evoke the disorientation and kind of like the nagging degenerative brain stuff, to using anamorphic lenses that would catch light in very spectacular ways and bend the frame, distort that world, to the use of music. One track that evokes JP's glory days, we tried to make those taiko drums you're alluding to were part of the NFL films-esque music. Gladiator entering the arena,
yeah.
Whereas we have some very other kind of more dissonant ambient Muzak stuff, and that evokes kind of like his inner vulnerability awakening. So it was about throwing all these different parts of this human being in play, evoking them cinematically, and then, you know, peeling them back or bringing them to the forefront as tension was rising or ebbing to take you on this ride.
I got so fascinated with your story that I think we need to stop and backtrack for a moment. And if you don't mind, the storyline, the nutshell, it's only 21, 22-minute
yeah.
long film, and yet you capture an entire section of this guy's life within one day. And that's basically what it is. Starts in the morning
yep.
and ends at night. One day.
Yeah. It takes place on Super Bowl Sunday. And it's essentially a bull in a china shop, an ex-NFL linebacker trapped in sun-bleached suburbia well before he's ready to be, and clamoring to get out, get back out on that gridiron, and dealing with faded glory that he still thinks to be very present, and a wife who's pregnant, and domestic fatherhood calling him, and the tension between those two things.
Tell us about the pier party.
And there's that other dimension where he delusionally believes that the Miami Dolphins
yeah.
is going to call him back
yeah.
when it's never going to happen, and everybody knows it but him.
Yeah, and that's the heartbreaking stuff. We could all relate to that. Clinging to a dream, wanting something so bad. it's funny how filmmaking works, that narratively was just a little fuse that needed to be lit, and then we could indulge in all the very human moments once we took care of this MacGuffin, which is like the agent, and that promise.
Let's talk a little deeper about your visual effects that you utilize, and one that I saw repeatedly that really struck home was starting a scene with just full wide open aperture, just white out, and then dialing in the lens. And it seemed to me, for myself, it was, that's how he sees the world, that's how he sees his day. And then one other thing, I was fascinated how you utilize the camera angle and position, mm-hmm. having the camera lens right next to his shoulder and handheld. So you felt almost like you're him, or if not, you're like this buddy walking through the day with him.
Yeah, I mean, we start the movie in, I think, almost like a minute and a half long extreme close-up. It's supposed to kind of like let you know what you're about to experience, the ride you're about to go on. And what we really relied on with this movie, like you said, was playing with light, aperture, and practicals and flares. Really wanted to do as much in camera as possible because we wanted it to feel real. As surreal as the movie feels sometimes, we wanted it to feel like you're in his shoes. Camera height and camera angle was very big for us. We shot, again, like I said, on anamorphic, so in CinemaScope in 2.35, and that gave us a lot of frame to play with. So we were always kind of, you have a very big man in this, you know, inherently cinematic landscape frame, and that's awkward. There's a lot of negative space on either side of him.
You better be focused.
Yeah, you better be focused. But it also spoke to, you know, his fish out of water quality of his situation in the suburbs, and also playing with his position and frame, how big he was, how small he was, and where he is really in relation to his wife. We were very conscious of that. A lot of the time you watch the movie, you could catch your eye going back and forth because they're not on the same page at all.
Or like the kitchen scene where she's talking, blender's running, and it's just kind of shorted out. Yeah, it's disconnected.
Absolutely, that's fun, and it's fun with, again, it all comes back to the actors. It's fun to give actors business like that, to kind of set them up, not to fail, but to make it more difficult, so then the real emotions and the frustration could come out. Yeah, I mean, we were lucky enough to shoot with a great camera and with great lenses and really shoot kind of your standard domestic scene, your standard domestic setting in a different way.
I noticed a tight close-up of J.P. Duke, the character, and so much is communicated non-verbally. Mm-hmm. His squinting of his eyes or his grimacing, there's no words, and yet you feel the pain and you feel that disconnect.
That's all Mr. LaMonica Garrett, who's our actor, who really understood it very deeply, the part. He played football in college and was in some NFL training camps and dealt with some of these concussion issues as well.
He was in Sons of Anarchy, right?
He's in a bunch of stuff. He's in Sons of Anarchy, he was in Veep, he was in Modern Families and Blackish. And what's great about him is that you can't hit a false note because you could see it. He knows how to act for the camera. You could see the synapses firing in his brain as he's trying to really understand what it is he's supposed to be doing. All you got to do is you got to set the camera up and you got to let it play out. That was like kind of a great lesson for me as a young filmmaker. Sometimes the best thing you could do is to do, you know, less visually.
But tight and powerful.
Yeah. Ride it. I mean, there's a lot. That's like the movie. There's a lot. We ride on the close-ups. We live or die on those close-ups.
It still is amazing to me that a short movie, less than 23 minutes, is a whole world in itself. It's a whole complete story. So many dimensions that gives me food for thought for days. And one is kind of the mixed messages. There's humorous moments and powerfully sad, poignant moments.
That's kind of how life is, right? I mean, we always like to think of it tonally as having one foot in the grave and another foot on a banana peel. Also trying to evoke what the experience of watching football is like. One minute you're cheering, another minute you're gasping because someone's been injured and carting off and really wanting to leave you on that note. Really, again, was just about following the logic of the character and feeling what he was feeling and letting the events of the movie just unfold around him. It's a credit to LaMonica's performance because you engage in a way that's very, it's a credit to his performance because he's able to evoke great pathos. You feel for the guy and you're still laughing. And I think that's like, that's very interesting and very effective because you're not sure how you're going to feel. You walk out of the movie theater and you're still thinking about the movie. You're still thinking about what you just saw.
Pretty much all the extreme behaviors and the distorted reality perceptions and even the hallucinations, those are all real metaphors, aren't they?
Absolutely. Like the off-kilter nature of the movie, that's all based on what my understanding of that ailment is. And it just happens to be that it also can function in a way where you, this screwball energy really gets you engaged, and then we could say something with the movie at the end. We could strip it all away and get to a very real place.
How would somebody be able to view your movie? Is it accessible?
Hopefully we'll have a little distribution deal for an online platform soon. You could go to www.iamtheduke.com and you could click on the contact info there. We could get you a link, and we'll be doing the festival thing ongoing. We're in a festival in Oklahoma City in June and a couple other dates going on.
Max Barbico, filmmaker, videographer, audio magician. What a pleasure to meet you and visit with you in Santa Barbara, where you grew up.
Thank you so much for being here. It was a treat.
Mine too. Thanks, Max. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Santa Barbara, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,